This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. Thanks for joining me on this rainy Sunday. I hope you're staying inside and dry today and that you can stay tuned. We've got Jesse Nadler's survey of the field of candidates eager to take the seat currently held by Bob Goodlatte. The Republicans have their pick for the general election, but Democrats won't know who their candidate is until next week's primary election, so we'll find out who's running. It was a big week in Virginia politics as the General Assembly passes Medicaid expansion after years of Republican resistance. And 5th District Congressman, Republican Tom Garrett, drops out of his race for re-election, citing his alcoholism. We'll talk about all that and more with political analyst Jeff Shapiro. And Jordy Yeager brings back some lessons for history from a trip to Ghana. But first, a group of religious organizations in Harrisonburg and Rockingham County is advocating for criminal justice reform at the local level, and they hope that government officials will find the solutions easy enough to put in place soon. WMRA's Christopher Clymer-Kurtz reports.
Jane and Gene Meeser's son spent 6 months in the Rockingham-Harrisonburg Regional Jail last year. Their experience with the criminal justice system was frustrating for them in many ways.
When you start putting it all together, it is just ridiculous.
One frustration was that providing their son with some basic things was expensive.
One of the first notes he wrote was, "Yeah, I'm fine, but I need money on my books so I can call and get stuff like socks, a shirt, shower stuff, and hygiene stuff, and food and letters." Later, he asks for money for thermal underwear and tops and bottoms because he was cold. And you can't just bring in things from the outside. It all has to be bought through their commissary.
And the prices that they charge for the things make convenience store prices look very, very attractive.
There were fees for adding money to their son's account, they said, high fees for phone calls, and a keep fee, which must be paid first by them since their son was in jail and not working. That keep fee is one focus of Faith in Action, a coalition of 25 faith congregations in Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. Since 2015, they have joined ranks to find ways to promote specific solutions for a local systemic issue each year. This year, they're advocating for local criminal justice reform.
The United States leads the world in incarceration.
The president of Faith in Action is Pastor Jennifer Davis Sensnig. You can see the jail through the window behind her church office desk.
We know that we can't tackle this national issue as our little coalition of 25 congregations, but we can make some changes here locally.
One change is the elimination of those jail keep fees for local inmates, fees which by state law may be established by any sheriff or jail superintendent to help defray the costs of a jail stay. At Middle River Regional Jail in Stanton, it's $3 per day. It's $1 per day at the Rockingham-Harrisonburg Regional Jail. Faith in Action is also asking for the hiring of a community justice planner and new rules to screen all juvenile justice cases to encourage the use of restorative justice. Restorative justice, empowering the voices of those who have been harmed and giving opportunity to offenders to make things right, is not new to this area.
I believe in restorative justice. I believe in restorative practices.
Harrisonburg Police Department Lieutenant Rod Pollard declined to speak about Faith in Action's initiative, but said that he has seen the department's use of restorative justice in 7 cases in 2017 have an impact.
These restorative justice cases that are successful are extremely powerful to everybody involved and would almost be considered, in some situations, life-changing because it gave people an opportunity to change their path, and it also gave the victims an opportunity to be very empowered. They have a huge voice in the outcomes and the obligations coming out of the situation.
Faith in Action wants to see the expansion of the role of restorative justice here, first in juvenile cases and eventually for adults, too. It's also seeking the hiring of a community justice planner to report to the Harrisonburg and Rockingham Community Criminal Justice Board, or CCJB. Here's Davis Sensnig speaking to City Council in April.
Since Harrisonburg and Rockingham County have jointly invested in a new $3.1 million information and data collection system, we're asking you to hire a well-qualified community justice planner who can analyze the data and apply for programs that will ultimately save us money and reduce local incarceration rates.
Faith in Action presented its campaign and petitions that now have more than 1,000 signatures to both Harrisonburg City Council and the Rockingham County Board of Supervisors earlier this year. None of the supervisors provided comments for this report in response to an emailed request, and Rockingham County Administrator and CCJB Executive Committee member Stephen King said that the supervisors have not directed staff to take any action regarding Faith in Action's proposals. He said this about the Community Justice Planner position.
Can we already do that with folks we have on staff right now is the question. And based on where we are right now with our data collection, is that the better option, is to wait and get a better sense for what we have? We don't add positions lightly.
After Faith in Action presented its plan to Harrisonburg City Council, several councilors voiced support for at least part of the coalition's proposals, including talking with the sheriff about eliminating the keep fee at the Rockingham-Harrisonburg Regional Jail. If Jean Meeser could ask for one thing, especially for families whose main wage earners are in jail, it would be for the sheriff to drop that fee.
That in itself, I think, could make a real difference in people's lives, and it would take a tremendous burden off probably the majority of the families.
Faith in Action plans to return to the Board of Supervisors and City Council later this year. For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
A group of more than 50 people traveled from Charlottesville to Ghana in May to learn about the origins of the transatlantic slave trade and how it can be better taught back here in the U.S. Jordy Yeager joined the group and has this report filed for Virginia Public Radio.
Deep in the jungles of Ghana is a crossroads by a river called Asin Manso, where for several hundred years, Africans from all over the continent were forced to bathe after being marched barefoot, naked, and in shackles.
So after your last bath, you had your first onsen. After your first onsen, you had your first branding right here in the market, before you walk another 31 miles.
There's something about the power of the ocean, and I can't help but think about those people who marched 300 or 400 miles from inland, who maybe had never actually been to the coast but would have heard about the beach.
Naya Bates is the public historian of slavery and African-American life at Monticello. She studies the lives of the people our third president, Thomas Jefferson, enslaved. Europeans brought hundreds of thousands of Africans to what would become the United States, and Virginia was ground zero. The country was founded on the exploitation of slavery. And so Bates has come to Ghana, 5,000 miles away, to learn more about its origins.
To hear those waves crash on that shore, and then to be thrown in a dungeon where you can hear it resonating against the wails, against the screaming and the crying and all of the deprivation of these spaces. And then for the last time you see it is the moment they take you out to the ships. Like, that's your last impression of your homeland. I just can't imagine how terrifying that must have been.
The Cape Coast and Elmina castles are massive, multi-level stone fortresses with dozens of rooms. Cape Coast was built by the British to compete with the Portuguese and the Dutch, which had operated Elmina for two centuries just 7 miles down the Ghanaian coast. As Europeans invaded the Americas, the castle's cavernous underground rooms transitioned from storing goods and gold for trade to holding Africans in bondage. Kidnapped from homes or captured in tribal wars, at any given time, as many as 1,000 African men, women, and children were held for weeks, sometimes months, in the dark dungeons.
They had everything on the floor, and they were sleeping in it.
Ato Ashan is a tour guide at Elmina Castle.
Meaning that what you see today, sometime past, had feces, urine, vomit, menstrual blood. And you seriously cannot underestimate the heat and the stench.
It was so bad for so long that recently, when the castles opened to the public for the first time, several feet worth of excrement had to be dug out. Even today, visitors stand not on the original stone floor, but on caked layers of fossilized remains. For enslaved women, the threat of rape was omnipresent. Traders, soldiers, but especially the castle's governor, who would stand on a balcony overlooking the courtyard where women would be brought out from the dungeons.
From there, he just looked through and then made his choice. This woman chosen could have been in the dungeons for a whole month. Never cleaned her teeth, never took her bath or bathe, gone through menses sometimes, and still the governor wanted.
Justin Reed is the director of African American programs at the Virginia Humanities, and at one point he found himself standing in the governor's bedroom. Both he and Bates have ancestors who were enslaved in the U.S. and sexually assaulted by white people.
Clearly, Nye and I both have women ancestors who were violated in that way. So being alone in that space really conjured up those emotions. And then again, at Elmina, we were shown the staircase where enslaved women would have brought into the private quarters of the castle governor, and again violated in the same way. I mean, the entire history is horrendous, but I think something about that in particular just really impacted me.
In teaching the history of the transatlantic slave trade, Bates and Reed say many of these details are often ignored, along with the advanced complexity of African societies that existed long before Europeans arrived.
They had different cultures, different belief systems, right. Different practices, different economies.
Very sophisticated. They weren't helpless in all of this.
Right. And they were doing what they had to do not to be colonized. It's important to note that these places were not colonized until 400 years after the slave trade started. So, I mean, they did what they had to do to survive.
Well, when we teach this history in the U.S., when we say things like, you know, the Europeans stole or the Europeans kidnapped or took, when we say those statements, we're unconsciously saying that the Europeans had all the power in this scenario and that the West Africans were weak, that they were unsophisticated, they were unskilled.
Ashen says they're right. It's much more complicated than most history books let on. Europeans, he explains, created a deadly cycle. They'd help smaller Ghanaian tribes wage wars of independence against larger tribes, creating the need for more weapons, European weapons. But Europeans no longer wanted gold or other native goods in exchange. Instead, they wanted people to force to work the land they were taking in the Americas.
So the more independent state created, the more the need came for them to gather weapons to defend themselves. And the only way to gather weapons were to bring in people. So make it a principle. Divide already divided people and heighten insecurity, and that will fuel the system.
In the U.S., white enslavers tried to control African Americans by eliminating any hope or purpose beyond the plantation. They used physical violence to strip away names, languages, customs. But in Ghana, Bates and Reed say all of these were on full display.
Experiencing that firsthand has changed the way that I think about the people who were taken as captives. This is a culture that has been relatively the same, regardless of modern technology, for a long time. And so these things are things that were stripped from the people that were taken. I feel like somebody robbed me. Like, I always had that sense anyway, but now I really feel like there's something.
This is the way we could move. This is how we could move through the world had we not endured centuries of oppression and colonization and enslavement. And,
right. Well, I've seen here entrepreneurs, people making a way out of no way, and I see that in the States too, but not to the same degree. And I think that's a spirit that was intentionally removed from a lot of Black Americans. So that will change the way that I research people at Monticello. They had a background before they were enslaved by Jefferson.
Now, 200 years later, 5,000 miles across an ocean, that background is finally starting to come into view. I'm Jordy Yeager.
Four Democratic challengers seeking the nomination for the 6th Congressional District. That's the district that covers much of the Shenandoah Valley. They all agree that the key to beating Republican nominee Delegate Ben Klein in this predominantly conservative region is connecting with independents and moderate Republicans. WMRA's Jesse Nadler reports.
It's not a coincidence that the Democratic Forum last week was held at the Virginia Horse Center in Rockbridge County. It's part of a larger effort by local Democrats to bridge the county-city political divide. The four candidates, Sergio Coppola, Jennifer Lewis, Charlotte Moore, and Peter Velasson, answered questions from a moderator before a standing room only crowd. On everyone's mind, how to beat longtime Republican delegate Ben Klein in November. The previous weekend, after months of infighting, a GOP convention nominated Klein to run for the open congressional seat being vacated by Republican Bob Goodlatte.
So the things that I'm going to do is run on my platform that I think there are some things that independents, libertarians, and Republicans can get behind.
Jennifer Lewis is a mental health professional from Waynesboro who supports the legalization of hemp and marijuana and opposes the Atlantic Coast Pipeline.
I'm not just fighting for the environment, but fighting for private property rights. And that historically has been a more kind of Republican or libertarian issue as it is.
The candidates agreed that the path to victory hinges on appealing to moderate and on-the-fence voters and on driving voter turnout. At one point, Lewis questioned whether the district is as Republican as people think.
So how can we say that this is a 2-to-1 district when about 80% of people don't show up and vote.
The Me Too movement was also part of the conversation. When former Roanoke County Supervisor Charlotte Moore responded to a question about equality policies she'd propose in Congress, she recalled an incident from her 20s that illustrated how sexual harassment can thwart one's career path.
The supervisor who was with me in the car said, "You really want that job, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I'd really like to have that job." And, "Well, let me tell you what you need to do to get it." And he proceeded to tell me what I needed to do to get the job. Well, needless to say, I didn't want the job anymore. I didn't apply for it.
Like the others, Moore supports equal pay for equal work. She talked a lot about how there's been an erosion of dignity and respect in politics. Guns were another big topic. Republican Ben Klein didn't respond in time to a request for an interview before the story aired, but he touts an A-plus rating from the NRA and strongly opposes new gun control laws. All four Democratic candidates support common-sense gun safety measures. Peter Velasin is an urban planner from Roanoke.
If I go up to a gun owner's home, they're going to say, "I want to take away their guns." And we know that's not true as Democrats. But the problem is that we're not talking with those gun owners. And who is? The NRA.
Velasin says he supports the government's recent curtailing of the Dickey Amendment. It prohibited the Centers for Disease Control from conducting research on gun violence.
Now, the problem is that the government has technically repealed it, but they're not putting any funding towards that research. And I want to make sure that if I go to Congress, we're going to fund that research, because that's how we can make smarter gun legislation, is having actual evidence about gun violence.
Student debt and lack of high-paying jobs were reasons candidates gave for the so-called brain drain of the region, young people who leave to find jobs elsewhere. Moore and Velasin pointed out access to broadband is still a big problem in rural areas. Sergio Coppola from Bridgewater said well-paying blue-collar jobs are already here, but a skilled workforce isn't being trained to take them.
You go to a job fair, no, there are jobs that are there. They are looking for a workforce, but we are not educating the people we need for blue-collar jobs in our area.
He advocates for free community college and vocational education. Voters will choose the Democratic nominee in the 6th District in primary elections on June 12th. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
Well, Democrats in Virginia have been pushing for a Medicaid expansion for years, but it took a wave election and a few Republican defectors to make it happen last week. Along with Tom Garrett dropping out of his race in the 5th District, it was a big week in Virginia politics. And here to talk about it is Jeff Shapiro, political analyst for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, along with WCVE's Craig Carper.
Jeff, much like Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner, Senate Republicans tried repeatedly this year to kill Medicaid expansion to no avail. And now, after 5 years of trying, Democrats have succeeded in expanding access to health care to roughly 300,000 low-income Virginians.
A big win for the new governor, Democrat Ralph Northam, and a big loss for the Senate Republican leader, Tommy Norman. This victory was fated in January when Kirk Cox, the new Republican Speaker of the House, indicated that he was prepared to support Medicaid expansion. This would bring Virginia fully under Obamacare on one condition, that there be a work for benefits requirement. The governor went along with that. That alliance isolated Senate Republicans. 4 Republicans defected on Medicaid expansion. That would have been the co-chairman of the Finance Committee and a hanger from Augusta County, Frank Wagner from Virginia Beach, Jill Holtzman Vogel from Fauquier, and Ben Chafin from Russell County in the coal fields of Southwest Virginia. One of the big concerns, of course, is will this augur a primary opposition for Republicans deemed insufficiently soft on Medicaid expansion? Of course, that would mean Wagner, Hanger, Chafin, and Vogel. But the sense is, among those Republicans who've strayed to the pro-Medicaid side, that, as Ben Chafin put it, no was no longer an option. And Chafin said in a floor speech, a very quiet, very reflective set of remarks, that this was going to make a big difference in his deeply impoverished area of the state, that the 8 hospitals in his district would get a welcome handout through the $2.5 billion that will initially flow into Virginia under this expansion. But maybe Ben Chafin got a friendly nudge from Governor Northam when he signed a piece of legislation prized by the senator that would preserve a tax break for the coal industry that was strongly opposed by Democratic Greens. Now the big question is, how will this program be set up? How will it operate? And the onus will be on this young Democratic administration.
And Jeff, starting late last week and a bit into this week, we watched Congressman Tom Garrett publicly wrestle with whether he would run or not for another term in Congress. Late last week, he forcefully replied, yes, he's running. And then within 3 days, reversed his position and announced he's an alcoholic and not running for Congress and seeking treatment.
Tom Garrett saying he will not seek a second term in the 5th District. That is that South Side anchored district that actually runs almost to the edges of the Washington area, taking in parts of Fauquier County. Had he stood for re-election, there's a good chance he would have been returned to Washington. This is a deeply red district, one in which Donald Trump piled up an 11 percentage point majority. However, the concern before Garrett pulled out was that if this were an open seat, and now it is, that may give the Democratic nominee, Leslie Coburn, something that passes for additional traction. So right now, all eyes are on the 5th District Republican Committee, which this weekend will select a replacement nominee, and there are lots of names being batted about. The one name that seems to be a favorite for a lot of Republicans is Bill Stanley, a state senator from Franklin County, who was also the chairman of the 5th District Republican Committee when Republicans took back that seat from Tom Perriello in 2010. The way would seem to be cleared, perhaps, for a Stanley nomination when his good friend Rice Reeves indicated that he, a state senator from Spotsylvania, would not run. He does not live in the district and clearly was concerned about the old carpetbagger label. But of course, candidates for Congress don't have to live in their district. They only have to live in the state that they represent.
Not illegal, just frowned upon.
Well put.
Thanks to Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Jeff, we will catch up again next week.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Klein May Realty, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, Nancy Barber, Pam and Jim Huggins, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. You'll find all of our stories archived at WMRA.org, so you can learn much more there, including how to support our News and Information Fund, which is how we pay for our reporting here at WMRA. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's News Director and Morning Edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday and try to stay dry.